Welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys break down your box office, movie news, our personal favorites, and of course the new release. Last week we had a really fun episode. We did the first ever Schlarnies. And we just want to give another thank you to our special guest last week, Matt Nost. I have gotten a ton of requests for different versions of what we did last week. So I'm excited. Obviously, we've got kind of a slower movie year, so we could throw a few of these extras in there, maybe some comic book, maybe a comedy, Oscars. I don't know. I'm just saying I had a good time. But as always, I can't be the only one talking on screen here. I want to say hello to my co-hosts, Benny and JT. How are you guys?
What's going on? Our episode, by the way, did really well last week. You know, I'm not going to give you guys the numbers, but it was every time we kind of do one of these episodes that's not just a review, I think it's a nice way to break up, you know, just especially when there's nothing worth reviewing. We're doing Argyle this week because it was the big release. We don't know what these movies are going to be like when we walk into it. If I knew how this movie was going to be, maybe we could have done our episode. But I'm glad to hear you got a lot of responses because I thought it was a fun episode. And I'm already thinking about other genres we could do and guests that we could have on that love those specific genres.
Yeah, Die Hard got robbed. That's all I'm going to say about that episode.
Disagree. Bill Hader disagrees.
Our good buddy Chance Ellison hit me up. He's like, not one of you threw out Linda Hamilton for Terminator or Terminator Terror. It's like, I mean, we're narrowing it down to one. So
she was my runner up. Like, if it wasn't my, if you were asking what my number one, number two were, it was Sigourney Weaver, Linda Hamilton. I had a, you know, it's, the hard part is we're only nominating one because those were my top two.
Well, it was a ton of fun, but we are going to this week go back to our standard format. And yes, Argyle is our movie of choice. And I'm going to be honest with you. I will not be part of the third segment review because I did not see this movie. And by all accounts, nobody else did. Because I'm going to use that segue. See, that's called clever. Clever narrating. We're going to talk about the box office, in which case Argyle was number one at the box office and made $20 million in gross over the weekend on a $200 million budget. I need to stress that. Apple bought this movie for $200 million. And we can talk about that when we give our thoughts on the box office, because this is, in the last 6 months, the second $200 million movie that Apple has put out, third $200 million movie that Apple has put out. Thank you, Benny, for correcting me. That has had almost no returns at the box office. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure. Coming in at number two was The Chosen Season 4. I know nothing about this, but apparently this was a big hit this past weekend. Brought in $8 million over the weekend. The Beekeeper took number three. I'm sure JT will be happy about that. Anyone But You was number four. Wonka number five. Mean Girls number six. Migration number seven. American Fiction and Poor Things doing well with obviously some Oscar nominations at eight and nine. And The Boys in the Boat still holding strong. I see that on a streaming channel. I'm actually planning on watching it probably tomorrow. But
don't. Do not.
Oh, no kidding. Not good, huh? Okay, maybe I'll just rewatch American Fiction. I love that movie, so I'll watch that one again. Well, boys, I gave you our box office order this week. You both now saw Argyle. Benny, I'm going to lead off with you. Your thoughts. Did the movie deserve to make $18 million this past weekend?
No, it definitely did not. It's overachieved for its quality, to be honest. Not to jump the shark for our third segment, but like Apple has cornered the market on $200 million that make like $20 million at the box office. Like they've decided that that is their lane. They're sticking with it and they are not going to let it go. So more power to the people buying iPhones. This is why you're paying $20,000 for your phone, to support pieces of trash like Argyle. Congratulations, iPhone owners. And, you know, it says a lot about the box office top five when a faith-based TV show is outperforming everything else. That's the month of January that we're having. Never seen The Chosen. Maybe it's a great TV show. But, like, The Beekeeper, other than that, and American Fiction, the top 10 movies are rough. I'm just going to be honest with you.
The Chosen, this like season four, first three episodes or whatever, this is a faith-based TV series. Have any of, Benny, you haven't watched it, JT, have you watched any of this show?
I've only seen the previews. It's the story of Jesus, basically. It's like, you know.
Oh, I see.
It's just like a mini show based on the life of Jesus. So it looks like any other show like that. So, yeah, not big. Listen, if I'm going to watch a movie like that, I'm going to watch like Martin Scorsese's Last Temptation of Christ, something a little bit more out there and artistic. But hey, you know what? If you love JC, go see this movie. I'm sure you'll have a good time. I want to say The Beekeeper is kicking ass. I believe it came out before Mean Girls and has now made more money than Mean Girls this past weekend. Is that correct?
It made more money than Mean Girls this past weekend, but Mean Girls has made more money than it has domestically. Mean Girls stands at $66 million. Beekeeper is at $49 million.
Nice. I believe it's past $100 million global, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yes. So the beehive is strong. Us bees out there are buzzing around and waiting for that sequel, man. I can't wait. I had such a good time with that first movie. $100 million budget, which is not based on an IP. It's basically just a Jason Statham movie. It's a really big hit for them. Mean Girls, it's a remake of a much beloved film that has, you know, Tina Fey. I just think this is a really great showing for Jason Statham. And Statham announced his next film will once again be directed by David Ayer, and it's written by Sylvester Stallone. Now, this is the second film Jason Statham has starred in that was written by Stallone. That Stallone did not appear with Jason Statham. Do either of you know what that film is? It's an action film?
The Expendables.
No, Stallone does not co-star.
The Delivery Man or whatever it is.
The Mechanic?
Not The Mechanic. It would be Homefront with James Franco as the villain, Jason Statham as the hero. Basically, it's kind of like Walking Tall in a lot of ways. Guy goes to a new town. James Franco plays a drug dealer who pushes up on Statham and kidnaps his daughter. And, well, I think you know where it goes from there.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, James Franco is playing James Franco.
Correct. But it's not a bad like little action movie. Stallone wrote it. Statham starred. I don't know who directed it, to be honest with you. But man, the fact that he's once again doing another Stallone screenplay and we got David Ayer coming back, picture me excited. I don't have high hopes for it, but I think it'll be a passable matinee movie.
So another side note, though, sort of circle back about The Chosen. It's another release by Angel Studios. Those are the guys that did like The Sound of Freedom that made like $300 million last year. So whatever you think about their movies, they have found their lane and they have found how to market what they are selling and who to market it to. So I think it's an example to like other people out there like selling niche movies. Like they have found who they're selling their stuff to, and they are doing it because I don't see commercials for this. There aren't previews for this on other movies. So I think people need to be reaching out to them and finding out, okay, how are you marketing to this specific group? Because given it is a specific group, but you can apply the same theory to other specific groups out there.
The funny thing is the time I would mainly see the preview for this Chosen series, do you ever go to the movie theater about 20 minutes before the movie starts? And they have like this 20-minute package of just behind the scenes, you know, little interviews. Over here at AMC, they call it Newbie. And it's just basically a 20-minute like pre-show before the actual movie. And that's where I would always see the preview for The Chosen in that little 20-minute gap. Do you do that, Benny? Do you get to the theater early and sit down with your popcorn before the movie starts?
I do, but all I ever see is like Maria Menounos asking tweens really easy movie trivia questions.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, I see that also, but I do see, you know, like certain Fathom events will be previewed there, and that's the only place I saw previews for The Chosen, this, you know, Jesus Christ miniseries that they started showing in theaters. So I agree with you. It's not heavily marketed, but I feel like if you go to the movies early, you'll see a lot of this stuff.
I do see this Fathom events. They have a Fathom event coming up at the Regal soon that is going to be all three Lord of the Rings in one day for $50. I think I gotta do it. It's all the extended editions too, so I'll be there for like 14 hours. I'll say this: as far as the Lord of the Rings goes, like I don't know outside of like Avengers: Infinity War and Endgame if I ever like looked forward to going and watching a movie in theaters. I was taken into the Lord of the Rings, the first one, like kicking and screaming. I was like, I'm not a fantasy. Really? I'm not a fantasy fan. I don't know this. This looks really dumb. And I left and I was like, oh my God, I love this movie. And then I couldn't wait. I went and saw it. This was at the time in which if you wanted to see a movie early, you went Thursday night at midnight, which is probably not a good thing to go see Return of the King, which is a 3.5-hour movie at midnight. Yes. But I did. My take, sorry, the joys of living in California is rolling blackout. So I just was clipped out of this for a second as power went out, but it returned back on. My quick thoughts on this, Wonka kicking ass, well over $200 million so far for this movie. It's still in the top five. Again, I just think that one, it was released at the right time. And then two, it's a quality movie. I enjoy this movie. So I'm happy to see Wonka doing as well as it is. Yes, the Beehive is coming on strong. And obviously, I don't know if people are tired of the Matthew Vaughn Kingsman world or his type of like stylization in movies, but when I look at like a Argyle, like this almost seemed like it was dead on arrival. I saw this preview so many times, but it was always the same preview. There was no change ever in the preview. And I remember thinking like, even as recent as like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, when I had gone back to the movies, I was like, oh geez, this movie looks like it's in trouble. So I'm not surprised that
they spammed us with that damn trailer. Okay.
They really did.
Now, if you're a regular American who only goes to see 4 to 5 movies a year, this is not an issue for you. Cause you probably went and saw one movie, saw the trailer. For cinephiles like us who go every week or maybe twice a week, just at the theater, I was so sick of this trailer. Like it was overdoing it. Like I've seen some great trailers in my day. The trailer for Mission Impossible Fallout is a favorite of mine. I remember Star is Born had a great trailer. Every time that trailer came on, I was like, yes. But every time the Argyle trailer came on, it got just grating. Every time I saw it, I was just like, oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom. We're going to get some popcorn right now because I don't want to sit through this. And that's not a good way. That's not how you should be feeling when your movie's coming out and you're trying to advertise it to the film goers.
I will echo something that Benny touched on, and that is that Apple now has put out 3 major releases in 6 months. So, again, if we do the math, and each one was at the cost in which we think it was, which was $200 million, not counting marketing budgets, maybe that is, but you're looking at $600 million. And if I'm not mistaken, their return is not even half of that. Now, I understand that Apple is a global product, and they are billions on top of billions. But at some point in time, there has to be somebody that looks at that type of a deficit and chimes in and goes, we can't do this anymore. I mean, the Godzilla Minus One kind of showed, again, we touched on this a thousand times on this show, but Godzilla Minus One showed you that you could make it in an amazing movie and it looked great on not a hugely expensive budget. So I'm wondering if it's just star power nowadays, because most of Argyle, from what I'm hearing, was CGI. But
bad CGI.
bad CGI, and you look at the cast, and you're like, wow, that's a really stacked cast, too. So why are these studios putting out this kind of money? Like, why is Apple fronting $600 million to make $200 back?
Here's what bothers me, because I understand, you know, big budgets in Hollywood is something that happens a lot today. If you're telling me this movie costs $200 million, I want to see it on the screen. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to leave the theater being like, that looked like they spent $200 million. Well, I watched this movie, and if you told me this was a $60 million budget film, I would have believed you, because it doesn't, there's nothing too grand scale. There's not, the effects don't look good. And it's hard for me to even imagine that the money went to all the cast, because who in this cast is demanding a huge paycheck? Not Sam Rockwell, not Bryce Dallas Howard. Sam Jackson probably got a couple million, and he basically is in one room for the whole movie. Bryan Cranston is not pulling a huge paycheck. Catherine O'Hara is not pulling a huge paycheck. Dua Lipa, barely in the movie. She can't be pulling too much of a paycheck. These aren't like, you know, there's no Tom Cruise. There's no Brad Pitt. There's no, you know, Margot Robbie. There's no big A-list actors in this movie. So, like, it's hard. I can't see the money going too much to the talent. Therefore, I had to go to the production of the movie, and it still looks like crap. So I don't know what the hell happened with this movie. Also, Henry Cavill, he can't cost that much, because all these people I'm mentioning, they're not in the movie that much, and they're not A-list talent. They're going to ask for like $20 million.
I think back to like Avengers Endgame, and Avengers Endgame had a $400 million budget. But at that point in time, Marvel was 10 years in, had made billions upon billions off of this franchise, and knew that this movie was going to make that kind of money back. So I don't look at that as a risk. I look at that as like a calculated investment, right? I look at this like, this is a risk. People viewed this movie before it was released. Like, people at Apple must have been like, let's hope that, you know, Henry Cavill and John Cena have that type of a star power to bring things in. This was a huge risk to release this type of a movie on this type of a budget. And to your point, JT, like, I've heard the same thing too in the reviews that I've been listening to for Argyle, is that the movie doesn't look crisp. It doesn't look great. So I'm curious when someone at Apple is going to step in, the CEO, CFO is going to step in and be like, okay, we're cutting out theatrical releases. Like, you know, whoever's in charge of choosing which, you know, movies we're going to buy, you're fired. We're going to now oversee this department.
Also, you know, I'm going to give Michael Bay a little pat on the back here. His two films that cost under $100 million, 13 Hours and Ambulance, were made for like $60 to $80 million. And both those movies looked 100 times better than this movie, technically. And like, the production value felt like it was there. You watch Ambulance and 13 Hours, those movies look like they could have cost $150 million. And the fact that he made those movies. So to me, it's more about how's the director using the money and how skilled is that director. I think it weighs in on something. I think Matthew Vaughn's just not that great of a director. I mean, he's made maybe two good movies out of all his films, in my opinion. So I don't know why they gave him this much money. I think I agree with you. Like, Moose, Apple needs to be like, who's in charge here? Who decides who's giving these people this money? Because his last two films were not good. Kingsman and the Kingsman 2, this Golden Circle, bad movies. Why give this guy all this money?
Whoever is like doing the movies right now for Apple, whoever is running the budget, they are like a general manager for the Washington Commanders, like in the 90s and the early 2000s, where they're like, 10 years ago, that dude had 20 sacks. Let's give him a $65 million contract. He's like, he played two games last year and has had his left leg amputated. He had 20 sacks 10 years ago. Let's give him $65 million. And they're like that. It's Ridley Scott. It's Martin Scorsese. It's Matthew Vaughn. It's guys who have had big hits, but have not had big hits in a long time, and who are not at their peak pinnacle, but they are paying these guys based on what they did 15, 20 years ago.
And but I can understand Scorsese and Scott. Like, Mount Rushmore directors, Matthew Vaughn, though. Come on.
But see, I can't see Scorsese because the guy, I mean, his highest grossing movie was Casino. Right. And that, to Benny's point, like, Casino's what, 1993,
95, I think.
So, I mean, you're talking about like the guy who's like last box office, like, gem. Now, The Wolf of Wall Street, like, did make money, but it ended up making more money when it went on VOD than it did in theaters. Because again, that movie suffered from the 3-hour trope. Now, I think The Wolf of Wall Street, I could watch that movie from start to finish and it not feel like 3 hours. I rewatched Killers of the Flower Moon. It feels like 3 hours, just saying. But yeah, I'm with Benny. Like, Ridley Scott, his last big moneymaker was The Martian.
Yeah.
And that was 2017, 2018. So again, like, I agree. Like, do you remember when the Washington Commanders signed Mark Brunell from the Jacksonville Jaguars and Bruce Smith to the largest contracts at that point in time? And neither of those guys had done anything for 15 years in the league. So I agree. Like, yes, these are Mount Rushmore directors, but at the same time, look, movie making is a business. It was one thing to send a statement with giving the Martin Scorsese movie, like, we believe in good quality filmmaking, but Napoleon was bad. And you didn't, like, again, like, these executives have an opportunity to view these movies in advance. So I have to think that they're like, to your point, JT, somebody's going to go down there and be like, you're gone, boy, you're out, you're fired. They're going to fire that guy. they're going to bring somebody in and be like, let's scale this back. Let's give re-sign Reacher for season three and see if that pays off for us.
They should hire us, all three of us. Give us an office at the Apple building. We'll get this studio G.
That's right. Remo Williams 2 coming out next year, baby.
Fred Ward died 3 years ago.
We'll CGI him.
Yeah. Well, speaking, oh, geez. One segue to another. We are going to move on to some movie news, and this is some very sad news, I think, for all three of us here, and that is the tragic passing of Carl Weathers. You know him as Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies. You knew him as Chubb Peterson in Happy Gilmore. You knew him as himself on the Larry David Show, and recently you've been seeing him as Greef Karga in the Mandalorian series. I may be wrong with the Larry David series. Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's the show he played himself on. But it is very tragic. Carl Weathers, he always just seemed like he was just a very, very good dude. And I've been really into the Mandalorian series and loved seeing him in these roles. My earliest memories of Carl Weathers is my brother telling me, like, yeah, dude, Carl Weathers is the man. And then he showed me Predator, and then we watched the Rocky movies, and it was just one kind of iconic role after another. And I always think that just Carl Weathers was probably the nicest guy on the set. So I am sad to see him go. And yeah, Predator was another iconic role for him. I'm going to miss Greef Karga from The Mandalorian. I thought he brought like just a ton of charisma to this like fancy ex-bounty hunter. So RIP Carl. Ben, JT, your thoughts on the passing of Carl Weathers?
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, Rocky is one of my all-time favorite films. It's a movie I grew up with. You know, I remember when Rocky IV, Creed passed away. I remember being like, damn, not only was I sad that he passed away, but like, I loved the character of Apollo Creed. He was so charismatic. Like, Rocky is this simple guy who's got a heart of gold, but Carl Weathers in that movie is like an electric shock of charisma and just pure athleticism too. Like, he is in better shape than Rocky in all those movies. Like, you watch Rocky 2 and Rocky 3, and Carl Weathers, even when he's training Rocky, looks like he's in a better shape. I'm like, how's this guy not the champ? But yeah, then Creed came along, which, you know, I thought was a great continuation of the series. And one of the biggest things was, man, what if Carl Weathers was still around? I would love to see him actually be able to come back in either Creed or Creed 2 or even Creed 3. But man, just a great charismatic actor who I feel like maybe didn't get enough opportunities to be in as many things as he probably should have. I love him in Predator, John McTiernan, Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's great. Second fiddle to the Arnold. The most, you know, epic handshake of all time in any action movie is in Predator. I always think of him all, but you know, like when he did show up in things later in life, like Curb, I don't even remember the Curb episode, but I loved him in Arrested Development. Yeah. His character playing himself, who is basically an actor coach for David Cross, has some of the most memorable lines that I can remember. And I just absolutely loved him in that. And people still quote those episodes in the lines that he had to this day. And then just recently having him show up in The Mandalorian, like, I was like, yes, Carl Weathers, say no more. It was so great to see him. And that's why the passing is so surprising, because he seemed like such a lively person. He seems like he was in such great shape. It really kind of came out of nowhere, you know, like Burgess Meredith and some of these other people, you kind of see it coming. I mean, they're really old, you know, they're getting frail, but he seemed like he had so much life left in him, and he seemed like he was just beginning the second phase of his career, or maybe third phase of his career, where he was really good. You know, he said he wanted to direct a Star Wars show or movie, and I thought he showed a lot of skills in directing some of the Mandalorians. So
yes.
R.I.P. Carl Weathers, R.I.P. Apollo Creed. And after this show, I'm going to go back and watch that Curb episode because I love me some Carl Weathers.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get like Rocky, which is, you know, one of the most iconic characters in the history of films. You know, that's been they've been making movies for, what, 45 years now off of that character without Apollo Creed. That movie doesn't work without his charisma. Yeah, his acting ability. He's the perfect foil. He's one of the all-time, he's not really a villain, but he's one of the all-time great foils in the history of movies. And then like later in life, where a lot of times you see him playing like the nice guy or the comic relief, not a lot of actors like have both of those in them. And Carl Weathers, he had the look too. Like, mm-hmm. had Carl Weathers been born now, you know, as opposed to when he was, Carl Weathers would have been an all-time leading man. Like, the reason that he is not is because in the 70s and 80s, they weren't giving black actors those lead roles. And that's the reality of it. He had the look, he had the acting ability, he had the appearance, the physique. He was the total package of an actor. And he had an amazing and iconic career. And it's kind of like sad. It's like, he's, you know, like if you're an actor and you think, man, could I have Carl Weathers' career? You'd take that 10 times out of 10 and twice on Sunday. But based on his talent, man, he even should have had more. And I really wish he had, but, you know, I'll miss him. Like, his movies were a large part of my childhood. Even Action Jackson, you know,
which is
a fun little action movie from the 80s. So I'll miss Carl Weathers, and I'm sad he's gone, but I thank him for, like, everything he gave me growing up, man. He entertained me a lot.
Also, shout out, I recently rewatched all the Toy Story short films on Disney Plus, and Combat Carl is, like, one of my favorite characters in all of Toy Story movies and shows. I think he brought so much fun livelihood to that character. Like, Combat Carl, I tweeted about him before he passed away, how much I love that character. So he just, you know, even when he was just doing voice work, he put his mark on whatever he was doing. So, yeah. R.I.P. Rest in power, Carl.
Rest in power, Carl. Well, on to a little bit of trailer news. And we had a trailer released today for A Quiet Place Day One. I'm going to have to look this up. I don't know if Krasinski is directing this one, but I do believe that he has written the story for this one. Krasinski has written the story for all three of the Quiet Place movies. Now, I was mentioning this when we were talking pre-show while Benny was watching the trailer. I'm not a big horror guy, but I like creature movies. And so I didn't think A Quiet Place was going to be in my wheelhouse, but man, did that first movie deliver. And the second one was a quality sequel to it. But yeah. JT mentioned something as we were talking before, and you said the first 10 minutes of A Quiet Place Part 2 is so, like, intriguing because it shows how everything starts to happen. And I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm so excited for this movie because I love, like, I like post-apocalyptic stuff, but I also like to know how it started. Like, I would love for a Mad Max, like, how did the world go to shit in Mad Max's world? So I'm super excited for this. I love Lupita Nyong'o. I think she's an outstanding actress. She's probably one of my top five favorites. So I'm excited for this movie. Jaimin Hansu is in this movie. I love Jaimin Hansu as well. Shazam, Fury of the Gods excluded. But yeah, I'm intrigued by this movie. I think it looks interesting. I think New York is a fascinating setting to see these creatures just going rampant. So yeah, I'm all in. Take my money now. This looks great.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I'm excited. When I first heard this movie was announced, I was really excited because Krasinski, while did work on the story, the director directed one of my favorite films from a couple years ago, the Nicolas Cage film Pig. It was my number one film the year it came out, and this is his follow up to that film. So good on Krasinski going out and finding, like, a really great director who just, you know, made a great indie film with Nicolas Cage, and to give him, you know, his franchise, I think is awesome. And the trailer looks really well directed. So I'm excited because, like you said, it's day one and it's the beginning, but I'm also excited because this director is attached, and I think he's going to bring something really exciting to it.
Now, Benny, you just watched this, right?
I just watched it before we came on air. The only pause that I have is it's a spinoff that's being bigger than the originals. And the guy directing it, whereas Pig is a very good movie, it's also a very small movie with, you know, very small sets, you know, very few characters. And so if they're just making the trailer look big and bombastic with the jet fighters and the explosions, I mean, to get people in the door, that's fine. But I am a little worried that you're taking sort of a smaller story and a director mostly known for telling a smaller story and then making it a big action extravaganza. So I worry about that transition a little bit, but I really did like the Quiet Place movies. And so I am really excited to see this, and Pig was a quality movie. So I have more optimism than I have more trepidation, but those one things give me a little like, oh, I don't know how that transition is going to look.
That's a great point, Benny. And I think what you're hoping for here is the marriage of those two things. You bring on this director who's great with the smaller moments and the smaller character moments, and hopefully they'll take care of the, you know, bigger production angle, the special effects. Everything seems to be like the effects that are in this, they all seem a little bit distant. You know what I mean? A little bit kind of like Cloverfield or some of these other films where everything's kind of happening a little bit farther away, but it's affecting the character there. But I'm excited for it because I think the scale will be bigger, obviously, because it is day one. But I think, you know, Krasinski's smart. And I think at the core of both of those first two films is their character pieces more than anything. And the horror kind of suspense is also right there, but you care about the characters. So hopefully they pull it off, but I'm really excited for it. And they gave it a July, I think, release date. They have a lot of faith in this movie, and I think that says a lot.
You guys touched base on this about two episodes back, and that was Universal announcing that they were going to be moving forward with a new Jurassic World movie. Well, it, by all accounts, appears that they have found a director, or at least are making an offer to a director, and that is to one David Leitch to direct the next Jurassic World movie, in which they announced would be coming out next summer in 2025, which to my ears sounds like they need to start filming tomorrow. So you can't see, but I looked at my watch to check the time. I often forget sometimes that this is a recorded podcast. Now, if you don't know who David Leitch is, he gave us the first John Wick. Well, he co-directed it with Chad Stahelski. He gave us the movie Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron. He gave us Deadpool 2, then moved on from Deadpool 2 to give us Fast and the Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw. And his most recent movie was the movie Bullet Train with Brad Pitt. Now, he has the movie Fall Guy coming out this year. I don't know if Universal has faith in him based on his past properties. I don't know if Fall Guy is going to be great and Universal has faith in him in that one. But JTE, Jurassic Park coming out next year. We just had Dominion 2 years ago. What is your thoughts on A, Jurassic Park returning theatrically, and then B, David Leitch taking the helm of this Jurassic Park movie?
I mean, I think they should have done what Star Wars is doing and take like 3 to 4 to 5 years off, not two. And the fact that it feels like they're rushing this movie, like you said, it has to come out next year. That means there are two things. One, Universal's hurting for money and they need some hits on the calendar. Or two, the script that David Koepp wrote is pure fire. And they're like, we have a guaranteed hit here. We brought back the original writer of Jurassic Park, and he has delivered an amazing script that even David Leitch can't mess up. So I feel like, you know, there's two sides of the coin here. I'm not sure which one is the truth. Probably most likely they need money. And David Leitch feels like such an uninspired choice. Like, David Leitch feels like a workman for hire, kind of in some ways. Like, oh, yeah, I need Hobbs and Shaw to be done. He knows how to do action, throw him in there. Oh, yeah, Deadpool 2 needs a new director. The script's good. Ryan Reynolds is in charge of that franchise. He could do a good job. Bullet Train, I felt like maybe it was the first like original kind of film. I mean, outside Atomic Blonde, but like his first one with a big budget and a big star with Brad Pitt. And I was very mixed on that movie. I felt too over the top. And that's one thing I will say about David Leitch. All his films feel a lot kind of over the top and cartoony. And that's not kind of the vibe I want for my Jurassic Park. That's kind of what the last trilogy felt like, especially the last two. It felt no suspense, no thrills. The action felt like it was cookie cutter. And I wish they would have gotten somebody that was a more of a Spielberg-esque director who's going to care about the characters and care about the actual suspense that needs to be built up and not just like a summer action movie. You know, J.J. Abrams did Force Awakens. I wish kind of J.J. Abrams would take a shot at doing a Jurassic Park movie. Ooh. He's shown with movies like Super 8 that he could kind of, you know, do his own version of that Spielberg kind of magic. It's not as good as Spielberg, but at least he gets halfway there. I don't think David Leitch is going to get a quarter of the way there. But also, I don't know what the script is. Maybe this is a totally different vibe than those last two trilogies. I don't know what the concept is. So at this point, you just got to hope the script's amazing and they feel like David Leitch can get the job done within a year and pull it off. But I'm not excited. He's not the director I would have picked. He wouldn't even been on my short list, that's for sure.
I like the J.J. Abrams pick for a Jurassic Park movie. I mean, look at what he did with Star Trek. Look at what he did with Star Wars.
Yeah.
Agreed. Super 8 is a hidden J.J. Abrams gem that I feel like more people need to see. I like that pick for a Jurassic Park movie. But I'm with you, JT. I think that this is way too soon. Look, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. I can defend Jurassic World. I understand that we're just rehashing Jurassic Park, but still, I can defend Jurassic World. I had a ton of fun. I saw Jurassic World twice in theaters. Jurassic Park is in my top five favorite movies of all time. I saw a couple of you on Twitter talking about like your first reaction to seeing the Tyrannosaurus. I remember being petrified. I was a child when I saw that movie in theaters, and I remember just being petrified and just I watched the VHS we had of Jurassic Park until we had to buy another VHS. I wore that shit out. I love Jurassic Park. I still get teary-eyed at the Brachiosaurus scene when he's like, the son of a bitch did it. He made a dinosaur. Like, I love that movie so much. And then it just goes and it continues. And each movie after is kind of a diminishing return in quality. I understand that these movies make money because it's dinosaurs on screen. But if you look at like Jurassic Park Dominion, it didn't look as crisp as some of the other Jurassic Park movies. The CG did not look good. There's a scene where like Chris Pratt is like riding down these dinosaurs on horseback and it just doesn't look good. The dinosaurs look fake. There was moments in Jurassic World Dominion that I thought were very interesting, especially like how dinosaurs were existing in the real world. I'm assuming this having the Jurassic World moniker is going to also mean that the dinosaurs are coexisting with humans. And this is kind of how we have to, like, maybe it's a world or it's a movie about that. I don't know. There's no talk about characters. It's a year away or maybe a year and a half away. So you would think that they would at least announce some actors. So maybe that's coming next. But I don't know. I think that there was a huge drop in quality in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I think Jurassic World Dominion it's fun to see the old timers back. But at the same time, like the movie is not a good movie. I really am not looking forward to this. I like about half of what David Leitch put out. I like John Wick, but JT, to your point, Chad, say his last name for me. Chad Stahelski.
You're asking me to say it?
Yeah, Chad Stahelski. Ray Stahelski had his hand on the wheel the whole time of that movie. So I have to believe that that wasn't necessarily David Leitch. I like Atomic Blonde. I like Deadpool 2 a lot. There's times in which I like Deadpool 2 more. He knows how to direct action. So I can expect that this movie is going to be action packed. But I also think it's just too soon for a Jurassic Park movie. I agree with you, what you have said. I think that they should be sitting on this for another 5 to 7 years before a new batch of Jurassic Park movies are made.
I'll also add this before anybody gives us two things. I would love if they made this movie take place in the 90s. Have it take place like between maybe Lost World and Jurassic Park. Get rid of all the technology. Go back to the original park. Maybe like it's a side story. My girlfriend even came up with a plot. Like some kids are on a boat. Their boat crashes on the island, you know, where the dinosaurs are. Kind of a little bit like Jurassic Park 3. But like, let's just get rid of everything that we've had to deal with in this last trilogy and go back in time and make like a classic Jurassic Park movie. But that's wishful thinking by me.
So as I said when we talked about like the Jurassic Park possibilities a couple weeks ago, the original Jurassic Park is a great movie. It is also, in my mind, kind of a ripoff of the original Alien. It is actually a version of Aliens for kids. It is a scary creature following people that don't, you know, have experience dealing with these creatures in the real life, and they have to survive. It is a small, intense, scary story. I know it's pared down for kids, but that's what it is. It's a horror movie for kids. And when they try to make it bigger, when they add, you know, machines and mutants and things and magic locust It doesn't work. It's a very simple story. Dinosaurs are scary and chasing you. That's when the Jurassic Park works. And I don't think that's the movie that David Leitch is going to make. And I don't mind David Leitch's movies. Like, I love Atomic Blonde. I love John Wick. But I don't think he's going to make a very simple dinosaurs are chasing you movie. And I don't think they have it in their head to make that. But I think that's what works with Jurassic Park. So, like I said, I think if you go back to that, I think, I don't care if it's 2 years, if you make a great Jurassic Park movie, good. I'll go watch it. But I don't think you're going to.
I just... If they are going to make this next Jurassic Park movie, please don't end up on an island. Get it away from the island. If you go back through the history of Jurassic Park, first Jurassic Park movie, on the island. Second Jurassic Park movie, they went back to the island. Third Jurassic Park movie, they went to the other island. Jurassic World, back on the island. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. The island explodes, but then it all centers in a house. So another island. Jurassic World Dominion. We actually get dinosaurs out in the real world, but wait, where does the movie end up? Back on an island in the middle of the mountains. Like, it just keeps going back into the islands. If you are going to center it in Jurassic Park world, make it in the world. Like, in the real world, that would be great. We are going to take a break, folks. Up next, since Matthew Vaughn has a limited resume, we're going to rank his movies, but we're also going to talk about our favorite funny or spy spoofs. So stick around.
In his time, he was the coolest swinger alive.
A lot's changed since 1967.
Bring on the sexy steers, man!
We're called flight attendants now.
Unfortunately, this is not his time. Secret. Mike Myers.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Austin Powers. International Man of Mystery. Rated PG-13.
Spies like us, the men, Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd. The training.
Heads down! Come on!
The mission.
What's this? You don't want it!
Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd.
We're Americans!
Spies like us, rated PG. Now playing at a theater near you.
Welcome back, folks. What you may have not known is that the Extra Movie Butter podcast is now a nationally syndicated podcast in the Vatican City. Look it up. Second smallest country in the world, the Vatican City. And we are nationally syndicated now. Congratulations, gentlemen. We did it. The Pope loves us.
Yes.
Me and the Pope go way back.
When we die, straight to heaven, baby.
Straight to heaven. We got the blessing. We're in good. I just want one of those little cars with the little bulletproof dome.
Yes.
Well, Matthew Vaughn has 8 movies that he has put out so far. And so we figured, because this would be a smaller segment, because not all of them are winners, we're going to choose our favorite from Matthew Vaughn. And then as fun, Benny suggested that we throw out some fun spy movies, which I think will be the extra movie butter, as you all like to tune in for. So I'll kick us off with my favorite Matthew Vaughn film, and it's probably no secret. It's going to be X-Men First Class. It is a perfect X-Men movie. I love Days of Future Past. I understand that that one is probably going to get all of the love, but I think X-Men First Class is outstanding. It's fun. It feels fresh. It kind of reintroduces the whole mutants after we had the Wolverine. We had X-Men Origins Wolverine. We had X3, X-Men United. Like, we had some real stinkers back to back to back of the X-Men genre. And this just brought in new characters to play some of the old characters. You got McAvoy. You got Fassbender playing Professor X, Magneto. You have a couple of fun cameos. You have the cameo of Hugh Jackman telling them to go fuck themselves. Like, X-Men First Class is fun. It's thrilling. It kind of has a little bit of like a Cold War spy drama mixed into it. So I very much enjoy this movie. I think that that's his best movie that he has put out so far. Who's next?
Let me say this to your choice there. I love X-Men First Class. I think he did a great job revamping the franchise. Like you said, getting McAvoy and Fassbender, those guys absolutely rule in both those parts. Fassbender, I think, is underrated. I think his Magneto is one of the best castings for like a comic character ever. I put him up there as one of the best. But the thing is, X-Men First Class, while I do think Matthew Vaughn is able to kind of sprinkle in his style there and make kind of like a 70s spy film in some ways, which obviously he likes to do from looking at his filmography, my favorite film of his is still Kick-Ass because it brought his brand of violence and humor, which are two things that he is very strong in a lot of his films, is the humor and the over-the-top violence. Kick-Ass was a movie I saw in theaters. I saw it on a Saturday morning, and I had such a good time. I did something that I've rarely done in my life. I saw it like the first showing around 11 a.m. I bought tickets for the same night at 7 p.m. I went back and saw it again that night because I had such a good time with the film, and the crowd reaction was so much fun that I saw the movie twice in a day. I've done that to very few films in my life. And I'm not saying it's like a masterpiece or it's like something that's worthy of that. But I will say it was such a refreshing new take on the superhero genre. And some of the scenes directed in Kick-Ass still stick to me. The scene with Hit Girl and Nicolas Cage is tied up and they used a song from Sunshine. That scene is amazing. Like, to this day, it is amazing. And it is one of the best scenes I've seen in, you know, a Matthew Vaughn film by far. So for me, I will go Kick-Ass. It was my introduction to Matthew Vaughn in a lot of ways. I didn't see Layer Cake with Daniel Craig, and I wasn't really a big fan of his other film, Stardust, which I know has its fans out there. There are people out there that love Stardust. I just wasn't able to connect to it. Kick-Ass was the first time where I was like, who is this guy? He's amazing. I can't wait to see what he does next. And then he followed up Kick-Ass with X-Men First Class. So to me, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class are 1A and 1B. I think they're both awesome movies. But to me, Kick-Ass feels like his stamp is on that film a little bit more, only because he had the R rating freedom to really push the envelope, which he likes to do, which he does later in movies like Kingsman. So yeah, for me, Kick-Ass.
So I would say out of all of his movies, X-Men First Class is the one that I will revisit the most. So it's the one that has stuck with me. This is talking about a director. There are movies that he produced that I like a lot more than anything he directed. But I was actually going to throw out Stardust there because it's kind of an outlier in his filmography. I know JDE didn't connect with it, but it had like a fantasy Princess Bride kind of vibe to it that I really, really dug. And the only thing that I think that stops it from being like a classic, like beloved cult movie is that it ends on a cliffhanger for a sequel that it's never, ever, ever going to get. And it's a lot like the movie The Golden Compass that came out around the same time. Another very good movie, but that will be lost in history because it's setting up a franchise that just never happened. But looking at it just in its own little thing, I think it's a really fun movie, and it's very different from the other stuff that he did. Like, everything else that he did is either, you know, over-the-top spy or comic booky. That's kind of the two things that he does. And then that one, it's its own thing. It goes out there in its own space, and I appreciated that.
So Stardust was going to be my next one that I was going to nominate. I'm with Benny. I really enjoy Stardust, not just because we get to see Robert De Niro as, you know, this captain of this lightning ship, but then he's also, you know, cross-dressing on the side. And but like there's like some very dark humor in the movie Stardust. Like, there's that whole line of brothers that have to basically, like, the throne will only be theirs after all of them are dead and there's one surviving one. So the father was an asshole and basically said, whoever kills or whoever is the last to survive will become my heir and inherit the kingdom. Well, then they just go about like trying to kill each other, and they do. And then it like each time they kill somebody, they all end up in the same purgatory with each other. Like, it's bizarre. It's strange, but it's a good movie. And I agree with Benny 100%. Like, I really dug this movie. So I would recommend Stardust. That's my second favorite Matthew Vaughn.
I need to go back and give it a chance because I haven't seen it in maybe 10 years. I watched it when it first came out and I didn't connect with it. But there is a large fan base who loves Stardust. You guys are definitely not alone. So it is one of those movies I'm going to add to my list of time. I got to give it a chance. Maybe time has change my thoughts on it once I watch it again.
I do like Kick-Ass a lot. That's another one I need to go back. It's funny because the first time I saw Kick-Ass, I did not like it. And it was at the time where it was like my mindset was no movie that isn't directed by Marvel will be any good. And then I went back and rewatched it again because obviously, you know, when we were all on the Schmodown, Kick-Ass was one of the comic book movies. And so I rewatched it and was like, you know what? There's something there. The less said about Kick-Ass 2, the better. But the first Kick-Ass was a lot of fun. But I'll throw out the next nomination. That's got to be Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about during our action. I'm not a big fan of the first Kingsman movie, but I don't hate it either. To me, it is middle of the road. It's enjoyable. I watched it in theaters. I think sometimes a movie comes out and people are just praising it and loving it. And when you don't like it, you just kind of sour on it a little bit because you're like, it was fine. Why does everybody love this movie? And it just happens. It happens all the time. I'm sure it happens to all you guys. So for me, Kingsman, I watched it. I enjoyed it. But man, everyone around me loved it. So I felt like I was like the one odd man out. And then you kind of build this little fort and you're like, no, it's not that good. Here's why. But, you know, I don't want to, you know, yuck other people's yum. So I'll just say I like The Kingsman, but I don't love it. But I will say this. It's way better than the sequel. The second one was bad. And I thought The King's Man was pretty damn bad, too. So after watching those two, my thoughts on Kingsman, the original, definitely went up.
So I think you have Matthew Vaughn's top four movies. You have Stardust, Kick-Ass, and his two X-Men movies, and the first Kingsman. And then after that, man, you're getting into the weeds. Yeah. Like, it's just a sea of shit.
Yeah,
he only did one X-Men movie, actually.
Days of Future Past. Oh, he didn't direct.
He produced.
Yeah, he produced. Then I'm wrong. So then he does really only have four. I was right the first time.
Funny enough, he was supposed to direct X-Men 3 in the original trilogy and basically backed out last minute because he wasn't agreeing with the producers and what they wanted to do with the movie. And that's why Brett Ratner came in last minute and took over X-Men 3. So when he did do First Class, it was like, hey, if I'm going to do it, you're going to let me do it the way I want to do it. You're not going to rush me and give me like a short shooting schedule. So it was fun to see him come back to X-Men after he literally was announced as the director of X-Men 3. And literally he's the one who chose to back out because he didn't feel like he was comfortable enough with the resources and time that he was given.
But I'm going to agree with Benny too. I think I don't know what to make of like the first Kingsman movie was, almost like a spy spoof, but it was a spy movie. It had funny moments. The action was very palpable. Like there was a lot going forward. I don't know if the second one, the studio was just like, hey, you made a lot of money on not a big budget. Do whatever you want. And it went out of control. And then the third, The King's Man, the original like prequel movie, it had no idea what it wanted to be. At some moments it was an action movie. At other movies, it was like a World War I drama. I didn't understand, like, and the action in that one just didn't work out. There were some very like strange characters in the movie. It didn't work for me. And it, from what I understand and from what I've heard, and I don't want to spoil too much, but Argyle is possibly set in this same Kingsman universe. So
doesn't matter. The movie made poop. Any plans he had for Argyle is out the window.
I feel like there's just continuing diminishing returns on this Kingsman universe. So I really don't know how this is going to continue to work out for Vaughn because I don't know. He's obviously got a love and a vision for this universe, but it's not financially there. So I don't know how much Apple has sunk into this. But after this flop, I don't know how much more they're going to. Well, at
the current rate, they'll just cut its budget to $150 million next time.
Yeah, probably. Well, let's talk spy comedies or spy spoofs, right? Either one of your choice. Now, I can't wait because, JT, you've been teasing us. You've been teasing us for two segments now about this movie that maybe only Benny would know. Let's hear about this movie.
So I love, you know, spy films, especially when you kind of have a fun spy movie like the original Kingsman. James Bond was the movie that they would make fun of back in the day because that was the big spy franchise. And in 1991, they made a film called If Looks Could Kill.
Richard Greco.
Richard Greco. Thank you, Betty. That's the applause I was expecting. This movie is about a kid who goes on like a London trip in high school and gets mistaken for like a James Bond type character. And from that point on, the movie is basically just a James Bond action spoof starring Richard Greco from 21 Jump Street. The only movie him I've ever really known him from. I mean, he shows up in the 21 Jump Street remake, but this is a movie I watched on HBO like every other week. I feel like it was just always on cable and I would watch it every single time. I loved it as a kid. I have not seen it since maybe the 90s, maybe the late 90s. So it's one I'm going to have to go back and see if it still stands up or if it was just a nostalgia cloud that I love it. Benny, I want to hear your thoughts on this movie. Do you remember this film?
I remember it well. It always came on at like HBO at like noon on a weekday during the summer. So I'm right there with you. Like I watched it a million times in the 90s.
Were you a fan?
I was. I really enjoyed it a lot, actually. I don't think it would hold up if I'm remembering it right.
Yeah.
But I really did enjoy watching it a lot in the 90s.
Did it, you consider it for this list, or was it gone from your memory?
No, I didn't consider it for this list. But I will tell you, like a year ago, it randomly popped into my head, and I could remember scenes from the movie, but I couldn't think of the name. And so I went down this YouTube rabbit hole until I found the trailer for it.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I think I've done the same. I've watched a trailer for it. It is a 90s. It came out 91. It is a 90s comedy. Sorry, Richard Greco as like the cool kid in school who has to pretend to be a super agent. He gets all the gadgets, but also he's on his school trip. I don't know, man. It's a lot of nostalgia there for me. But again, who knows? I might watch it now and be like, wow, that's terrible. But God, it's still good in my heart, in my memory.
No, yeah, the nostalgia would definitely make it a 3 or 4 star, regardless of the old
time. Have you heard of this film?
No, I looked it up, like as you guys were talking about it. The only notable cast member I would know would be Linda Hunt.
Yeah, that's right. Linda Hunt's in it.
Everyone, like William Deere is the director. No idea. Like, just reading the synopsis, I'm like, I've never heard of this movie, but it fascinates me that you both, like, you just mentioned the title and Betty went, oh my God, Richard Greco, I know this movie. So I will put this on the old Flixify and give it a try and see if there's any recollection of this movie.
If you look at the poster, it says everything you need to know about this movie. The poster looks good to you. Go ahead and watch it. If the poster looks ridiculous, still watch it. I'm going to read the tagline on the poster. He's a student mistaken for a spy. Now all he has to do is rescue a beautiful girl, save all of Europe, and graduate from high school. No problem.
Yes. And that's the script, too. That's the whole
script. Yeah, that's it. Also, the tagline is he's having the adventure of someone else's life. I love it. I can't wait to go back. I want to watch this movie this weekend.
So, Benny, how about you? You're up next, buddy.
So I'm going to throw out one that has a very similar premise, but is probably slightly better known. It's a Bill Murray movie called The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Yeah, you stole my.
Yes.
I saw
this in theaters.
Yeah, I did too, and I think we must have been the only ones, man, because I remember the movie bombing. But I always remember the trailer where it was just Bill Murray like running on like a dock saying if you could find him and didn't like the movie, he'd give you your money back. So Bill Murray, it's the same premise as If Looks Could Kill. He goes to Europe. He gets mistaken for a spy. He thinks he's in like a weird dinner theater kind of thing. And he just ends up being the world's greatest spy because he's a bumbling oaf. But it's one of my favorite Bill Murray movies because it's just him being Bill Murray at sort of the height of his powers, which is always entertaining to me. And I like that, you know, obviously I like Looks Could Kill. I like this. I like that premise in movies where just an idiot gets sucked into this world. Those are actually the spy movies that I like the most. And so to me, it's super fun. I'll let Moose talk about it some more.
Yeah, this is Bill Murray, like in his prime doing Bill Murray. I agree 100%, baby. This is going to be, I'll have another selection right now for you, but like, this is going to be my pick, was The Man Who Knew Too Little. I think Peter Gallagher plays his brother. And he's like, again, because Murray like is just baffling all of these like different agencies that are involved. Like, they kidnap his brother and torture him. Alfred de Molina is like the butcher, like the hitman they hire to like go after Murray. Yeah, it's great. I love this movie. And it really is just Bill Murray bumbling around being like witless Bill Murray. But yeah, being inadvertently, like unintentionally the smartest man on screen. But, you know, obviously, like, he's foiling all of these. Anyways, I could go on about this movie for a while. It's great. Good pick, Benny. Never heard of, sorry, JT, what was your movie again?
If Looks Could Kill.
Okay, I gotta,
I will say this. I had a pretty simple rule in life for most of my life. Bill Murray's in a movie, I'm going to go see it.
Right.
In the 90s, I think I saw everything that he starred in. Elf, big, Larger Than Life, the elephant movie where he inherits an elephant and just has to go cross country with the elephant. Saw it. That, like, I think that came out like right around the same time as A Man Who Knew Too Little. So yeah.
Osmosis Jones, shout out.
Yeah. Osmosis Jones.
Jones.
Great. He was the best part of that movie.
I'll go 80s for this next one. I mentioned it before. It's a John Landis movie. And this is back in the time when Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd were bankable actors. So you could kind of put them in anything. They were the kind of go-to comedy guys at this point. And it's Spies Like Us. I've not watched this movie in probably 7 to 10 years. And I need to go back and give it a rewatch and still see if it holds up. But I'll never forget the doctor scene. In my previous job, I worked with a bunch of doctors, and when they would all get together in a room, I swear to God, it was like the scene from Spies Like Us where all of the doctors get together and they just go, doctor, 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 doctor. Like, again, I need to go back and watch. I don't know how well this movie holds up, but I remember loving this as a kid. Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd in the 80s. I mean, that was my childhood growing up. Like, you hear that Chevy Chase ultimately turned out to be a real douche down the line. But still, like, you can't deny that the 80s and early 90s, Chevy Chase was the go-to guy for comedy. And if you go back, like, his comedy performances still hold up. So I want to go back and rewatch this movie, but I would also recommend it's a John Landis movie. I love the John Landis movies. Spies Like Us, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase.
Listen, I love Spies Like Us. I have the Blu-ray 2-pack
nice.
With Funny Farm, one of my favorite Chevy Chase movies, and Spies Like Us. And I watched them both recently, and I just love Spies Like Us. It is ridiculous in the best way possible. Also, if you're a big fan of Spies Like Us, Family Guy brought back Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd for an episode where they basically... It's almost like a mini sequel to Spies Like Us, but also they redo the whole mission from the original film.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. The whole episode is basically a 30-minute version of the Spies Like Us movie with Stewie and Brian teaming up with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase. And Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase come back and reprise the role. So if you're a big Spies Like Us fan, go find that Family Guy episode. It's a great love letter to the movie.
And Spies Like Us is really the most accurate recounting of the Cold War that you can find on film. You guys may think I'm lying about that, but I'm old enough to have memories, you know, of the Cold War still going on. And trust me, that's how the world was going to end back then, is some schmucks getting drunk and just setting off a nuclear war.
Well, for the sake of your guys' review time, why don't we each go through, we'll just do a quick rattle off of one or two honorable mentions. JT, do you have any?
Yeah, this is a movie I saw in theaters that I really like, but got totally destroyed by critics. But I still kind of enjoy it, and I rewatched it not that long ago. I Spy, starring Eddie Murphy and Owen Wilson.
Oof.
I know it's not a well-reviewed film, but I saw it in theaters, and I had a pretty good time with it. And watching it now, I think Eddie Murphy's actually funny in it, and I think Owen Wilson does his usual Owen Wilson stuff. So if you just want like a mediocre, fun movie with two good leads, I would recommend I Spy. I don't think it's that bad.
So I'll throw this out there, and it's not a good movie, so please don't take it as a recommendation for a good movie. I just like it because I like Rowan Atkinson. So it's Johnny English. Sure. It's a terrible movie, but I don't care. I like Rowan Atkinson. He makes me smile. So I'm mentioning it.
I have not seen any of those Johnny English movies.
I have. I'm with Bendy. Like, you have to like Rowan Atkinson, like Mr. Bean type humor. And I do. So I enjoy the movies of Johnny English and Johnny English Reborn. You know, there's another sequel to it. So I'm with Benny. I like these movies, but I like Rowan Atkinson and I like his type of humor. So I think you have to take it with a little bit of like, if you don't enjoy Mr. Bean, you're not going to enjoy these British movies. I don't know if we would consider this like a comedy, but I remember very much liking this. I'll throw out two quick ones. One, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. by Guy Ritchie. You had Henry Cavill and, you know, the guy we now Army refer Hammer. To as Voldemort.
Hannibal Lecter, yes.
Yeah, Hannibal. That's the better one. Hannibal the Cannibal over there. But I remember really liking that one. That one was killed instantly at box office. It did not do well. And then the other one, I've talked about it before on this. Melissa McCarthy just has a soft spot for me when it comes to like humor, and it's the movie Spy. Jason Statham is so freaking good in that movie. Love that flick. Can rewatch that movie endless time. So those are my two honorable mentions.
Also, quick shout out to Austin Powers. The Austin Power movies are just some of the best, but they're more comedy than anything. Yes, it is a full-on spoof, but I feel like the movies we're talking about at least have some grounded in reality to it, whereas Austin Powers is just, you know, a great Mike Myers comedy.
And one other quick shout-out here. If you ever have someone that you don't like that listens to your movie recommendations, recommend a movie from the 80s called The Trouble with Spies, starring Donald Sutherland. It's a parody of a spy movie, but it's one of the least funny movies ever made. It's god awful. So if you ever just want to fuck with somebody, recommend The Trouble with Spies to them.
Yeah, it's like Brain Teasers. Oh, too soon. No, actually, I thought that movie was funny. That's good.
Brain Donors.
Brain Donors. There it is. Sorry.
I was about to say, what are you talking about? Brain Donors. Also, Brain Donors just announced it's coming to Blu-ray in March. For the first time. Okay. You better believe I've already pre-ordered my copy.
We are going to move on to our next segment, folks. I'm out. I do have Somewhere I Need to Be Tonight. Also, I have not seen Argyle, so I'm going to leave you in the more than capable hands of my own, and that is with Benny and JTE. So, gentlemen, have a good review. Have a good night. Cheers.
Happy birthday, Moose.
Long Kiss Goodnight is hugely entertaining.
Run for your life!
More thrills, spills, death-defying stunts than any other film I've seen this year, says Liz Smith.
Score!
Gene Siskel calls it action-packed, smart, and funny.
Hey, honey, this is a real big gun.
This ain't no ham or rat pal.
And Rolling Stone says it's super sexy and action-charged. Woo-hoo! Gina Davis.
Cheers.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Nobody move!
The Long Kiss Goodnight, rated R.
Now playing at theaters everywhere.
We have to stop the sale of a nuclear bomb. They send in someone who looks like Santa Claus's wife.
Ciao, bella! Hey, come esta?
It's a confidence builder.
I'm gonna ruin this mission.
Damn it! Put your roof on a scooter! What are you, the Pope?
Spy, leave the action to me.
Oh, that's not fair!
Rated R, June 5th.
What's up there, Popcorn Kernels? That's what I start calling our fans, Popcorn Kernels. We are here to talk about the movie of the week, and that is Matthew Vaughn's Argyle. That's right, a $200 million film from Apple, released by Universal. I think Matthew Vaughn was hoping to launch a new franchise with this movie. He's talked about wanting to do sequels. There's even stuff in this movie that hint at maybe doing a sequel or leading up to a sequel. But like we said earlier in the show, I don't think any of that is going to happen because this movie pretty much bombed at the box office. And reviews haven't been great. I think it was at 36% as I was walking into this film. But I did get a text from my good buddy, Benny. And Benny said, critics are being too harsh on this movie. It's not that bad. So my hope was risen. I said, maybe this won't be that bad of a movie. So I walked into Argyle with an open mind. I'm here to say I thought it was pretty awful. We're going to give overall thoughts and we'll go into spoilers. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot to say about this movie. I will say this. I thought the first 30 to 40 minutes of this film was okay. It was passable. It was kind of fun. But to me, the movie really kind of goes off a cliff as certain things in the film are revealed. And by the end of the movie, I cannot wait to get out of that theater. At 2 hours and like 15 minutes, it more than overstays its welcome. If you're going to make a 2 hour, 15 minute movie, I need to be engaged in the characters, the story, or I need to like something about the movie. And the more I sat in that theater, the more I disliked the film to the point where I just did not enjoy my time overall. And the weird thing is, if you would have took me out of the theater 30 minutes in, and I had to rush out of the theater, and you caught me going to the bathroom and said, "Hey, how's the movie?" I'd been like, "Yeah, it's not too bad so far. We'll see where it goes." Problem is, I did return to that theater, and I had to watch the rest of the film. So overall, for me, it was a big miss. I think Matthew Vaughn is on a really bad streak as of late. I think Kingsman was bad. I thought the Kingsman sequel was horrible. I don't know what's going on with Matthew Vaughn. We, you know, our second segment, we gave him a lot of praise for some of the movies that we really enjoyed. I don't know if he was just maybe a one-trick pony. We've seen all the tricks he has in his bag, but this is just how I feel about the film. Benny, you seem to like this more than me, for sure. So what are your overall thoughts on this movie?
My overall thoughts is it's exactly what I texted you. It's not great, but it's not as bad as people make it out to be. There's some entertaining stuff in it, and I think Bryce Dallas Howard is good in the movie. And so I don't think it's the worst thing that I've watched this week. I've watched worse movies this week than this. And
I praise.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll say this. To me, it's watchable. It's not a movie I'm going to watch again. And I agree with you. This should have been a 90-minute movie. And it's a 2 hour and 15-minute movie. But anymore, that's par for the course. You know, that's what they do now. There is a certain point in the movie where it stops being sort of a generic, bumbling spy movie, and it just gets weird. There's just like 55 plot twists for no apparent reason, and like all reality is suspended. Like even in its own world, the rules of physics and combat and everything that it had established earlier, all those stop applying after about an hour, and it does go very much off the rails. But like I said, you get a good half an hour, then you get an okay half an hour, and then you get a really bad hour and 15 minutes. But like I said, at least you get, you know, a half an hour good and a half an hour of okay. And some movies in the theater right now don't even give you that. So
I think one of the biggest issues with this film for me is the tone is all over the place. This isn't spoilers, but like you've seen the trailer, you know, Henry Cavill kind of plays this imagined Secret Service who stars in the books that is written by Bryce Dallas Howard. The opening sequence of this movie is like a spoof. Like she's writing these movies and she's writing these books, and they show you an opening scene, which would feel like it'd be the opening scene to a Kingsman movie that this guy has made. It's really over the top. Dua Lipa, Henry Cavill, you know, John Cena's in there. And it feels like, okay, this is the imaginary world of spies that she's imagining. And the action is very over the top, very cartoony. If you're going to set up us up with that kind of scene, I need this action in the real world to be much more realistic, much more serious, and more, you know, gritty in a lot of ways. So that way you have something that's balancing the imaginary book, James Bond-esque movie that's over the top. And then when you get to the real world, it's more grounded in reality, but they don't do that. The action in reality is just as insane and over top, and eventually more so than it is in this book fictionalized story. Now, we'll get into spoilers why that may be, but for me, the tone, I felt like those two tones were wrestling with each other because they were too similar in some ways. I think we're just going to have to go into spoilers because a lot of the examples I have are in spoilers. I'll just say is the biggest issue for me watching this movie was tone. I think some of the casting in this is mistaken. I don't think Bryce Dallas Howard was the right actress for this, and there's nothing against her. Sam Rockwell, I feel like, is kind of charming in this movie, but then by the second half of the movie, he's kind of boring. And Sam Rockwell is one of the most charismatic actors, in my opinion. To make him boring is a true feat of it's a feat. That's all I can say. I don't know how they did that. And the side characters also so cartoony and over the top that I couldn't take anything seriously. And then they kept pushing that envelope to the point where I just didn't care anymore. So for me, the movie is a mix of tone, and the story also doesn't make a lot of sense, which I'm going to try to unravel as we do spoilers. So Betty, I'll give you give us your final overall feelings, then we'll go right into spoilers because I have so much I have to say.
I would say this, don't watch it unless it's streaming and there's just nothing else. Like, if you really dig the Kingsman universe, like you loved Kingsman 2, then this is, you'll have fun with this. It's on par with Kingsman 2. It may be a slight step down from this, but it's similar to that. Similar in tone, similar in quality. So if you like that, you'll probably dig this. But either way, I wouldn't pay money to go and see it. I would wait till it streams.
Well said. All right, let's go into spoilers. This movie advertised itself as who is the real Argyle? I feel like I figured it out about 10 minutes into the movie, along with all the other twists that happened in this film. I feel like I saw it coming a mile away. Before any reveal happened, I leaned over and I said, you know who this is going to be. This is so-and-so. You know this is the deal. This movie, to me, they reveal that Bryce Dallas Howard, who wrote these books, had a skating accident. And once that was said, and that, like, she had to rebuild her memory. Okay, so she's Argyle. She's the secret agent. She has amnesia. She's going to realize who she is. This movie takes two of my favorite action films and bastardizes it. It steals from it wholeheartedly. The first film is A Long Kiss Goodnight, starring Gina Davis. A great 90s action movie directed by Rennie Harlan, where a woman gets amnesia, who's a secret agent on a mission, then thinks she's like this household mom and becomes... realizes who she is, cuts her hair short and dyes it blonde, who Bryce Dallas Howard also does in this movie, and then she becomes like a super badass agent. That is taken directly from A Long Kiss Goodnight. Then later in the movie, she's going through a file and she realizes she's actually the bad guy, that she's the one who turned on her friends. That is stolen directly from Total Recall, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Towards the end of the movie, Total Recall, Arnold, who is our guy who has amnesia and turns out to be a spy from Mars, realizes at the end of the movie that he was actually a bad guy and watches a video of himself saying, "Haha, I am actually here to help you. And once we erase your memory, I'll be back." Those are two of my favorite action movies, one from the 80s and 90s. And they basically steal those and throw it in this movie so lazy and so haphazardly that I was insulted. Benny, did you feel this way about those two turns?
I felt this is a weird thing. The movie is very generic feeling, even though it is constantly giving you plot twists. And it's kind of odd how it manages that, where every part of the plot does seem generic, even though they twist the plot literally every 15 minutes. And so I am with you. Like, a lot of this is just like little scenes and stuff lifted from probably better action movies. And a lot of it is also lifted from Matthew Vaughn's other movies. Like, it's a hodgepodge, I think, of his greatest hits and movies that he probably liked growing up. That's what it does feel like.
Are you a fan of Long Kiss Goodnight?
I have not watched it in a long, long time. I remember thinking it was okay, but I probably haven't watched it since the 90s.
How are you a fan of Total Recall?
Love Total Recall. Not the remake. The original is an all-time classic.
Okay, well, you need to watch A Long Kiss Goodnight because that movie is awesome, and I think you would love it. I will say this. Like, well, going into this movie, I knew it was going to be a fun spy film. And I know that Matthew Vaughn is capable of creating fun action scenes, but none of these action scenes really stuck out to me. And by the end, I was not only not enjoying them, but I was downright kind of disgusted by them. I thought the scene with the smoke and the dance number as they're fighting all the guys with the smoke bombs, one, it looked terrible. The CGI smoke looked awful. And I don't understand why they were doing this whole dancing while they're shooting everybody. It just came off kind of dumb to me. And then they cap it off with the damn ice skating callback where the oil's all over the floor and she's all of a sudden Nancy Kerrigan out there doing these moves, and none of it felt cool. I felt like the movie was trying to be like, look how cool and inventive these scenes are, and none of it felt cool or inventive to me. It felt lazy. It felt like it was poorly executed. I think you're supposed to, I think Matthew Vaughn wanted you to see those scenes and be like, oh man, this is so much fun. This is so cool. And yet I felt none of that. I just felt, I hated it. I just hated the scenes. By the time she was done ice skating, my eyes were in the back of my head from rolling my eyes at this movie. Cause I was like, this is not fun. This is not inventive. This is just feels like a cartoon Looney Tunes action scene. There's no stakes. There's no actual danger. And I guess that's what Matthew Vaughn was going for, but it didn't work for me.
So I will say the scene where she is ice skating on the oil is a terrible scene.
Thank you.
Because one, that's not the way that ice skating works. That's not the way that knives work. It's not the way that boots work. And that's not the way that people shooting guns at you work. So even if it's over top, yeah, I know it's over the top, but it's still a bad scene because none of those things can happen. Even in an over the top world, none of that would work. So it's just a bad scene altogether.
And here's the thing, I would almost forgive it if it looked good. If it looked like somebody was actually ice skating and doing some of these tricks, but it looks so CGI'd, it looked like I was watching a cartoon. I couldn't even appreciate it like on a technical level of like a physical human actually pulling off these moves. Because I know Bryce Dallas Howard was not actually pulling off all these ice skating moves. So to me, it felt even worse because of that.
Now, the thing with the smoke, like when Moose said someone said to him that he thought this was supposed to be part of the Kingsman universe. I think that's why they did the scene with the smoke. My wife was actually watching the first Kingsman a week ago. And at the end of the movie, when all of the heads are exploding from the cell phone, they turn into that exact same colored smoke. I think that was supposed to give you sort of a hint that this is happening in that world. So I think that's what the smoke was meant to be. I don't think it worked because it just let you not see whatever was happening. I liked the song, but the actual action of the scene was terrible because of the smoke. But I at least understood why the smoke was there. I thought it was to connect to the other Kingsman movies. But yeah, it wasn't a great scene in and of itself.
There's a scene in A Long Kiss Goodnight where Gina Davis grabs her daughter's ice skates and ice skates across a pond with a gun and shoots a car that's basically running away with her daughter. That is a great action scene of a badass lady actually ice skating and taking out dudes who are running away with their daughter in a car. Once again, this movie ripped off The Long Kiss Goodnight. And I love The Long Kiss Goodnight. I want people who are listening to this podcast right now to go watch The Long Kiss Goodnight and do not go see Argyle. Rent this movie. It is a little over the top, but not nowhere near to the point that this movie is. This movie feels like it borrows and steals from so many other genre films that I love and brings nothing really new to the table. I think none of the twists, like Bryan Cranston being her dad, I saw coming a mile away. The second they showed her dad come, before he even entered the room, I was like, oh, it's her dad. The twist of her being Argyle, not a big surprise. The twist of her being bad, second it happened, I leaned over, I said, they're doing a Total Recall. I figured it was either going to be her or Sam Rockwell is bad. And then Sam Rockwell has like some idiotic scene where he's in the shower and he turns the shower on and he's like, we got to kill this lady. But he says it so loud. Like, how does he not think she's going to hear him when he's like on the phone yelling it just because he's in the bathroom? The movie just asks you to ignore logic at every step of the way. And I guess maybe that's the ride that Matthew Vaughn just wants you to go on, because even the first scene, which I thought was okay on the train, I thought the scene where Sam Rockwell was kind of like taking everybody out was kind of fun. And the scenes where it intercut with Henry Cavill was also kind of fun. But then I'm thinking to myself, if she's Argyle, why is she seeing Sam Rockwell as Argyle, when in the book, Sam Rockwell's character is John Cena. It makes no sense. If anything, when she was fighting, she should have been Henry Cavill. It makes no sense.
So I will say that when this movie lost me is they go into this building to find a computer chip, right? And it's buried in the floor. And then they run up to the roof and they do a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure where it's just like there's really no escape. But then they turn to each other and go, you know what would be great if there was a giant stuntman balloon down there? Oh, wait, there's a giant stuntman balloon down there. Of course there would be. You know, it's like when Ted, if the keys were right here, we could just go in and there they are. And I knew the movie was going to lose me at that point. And so there is no real plot. It's just Matthew Vaughn sort of decides that this is what the next scene is going to be. And then whatever needs to happen to get you to that scene happens. And after about 30 minutes, like he does away with the story or the plot. And it's just like, there are these scenes. He's going to do these scenes. And whatever magic or twist needs to happen for that scene to have a reason to come about, that's what's going to happen. And that's kind of what the movie does. Now, I think whether or not you like those individual scenes will kind of judge your enjoyment of the movie. And that's why I said it's like the Kingsman movie, the second one is a good indicator of what you will like. So if you like that ridiculous, you know, I have a whip and a bottle of whiskey kind of scenes out of Kingsman 2, that's the quality of these scenes. There's not even a reason for you to get to, but if you like them, they're there.
Yeah, I guess I just couldn't really get on this movie's wavelength. I'm an action aficionado. I love action films. And I was hoping to at least walk away with like some action set pieces that I enjoyed, but I didn't really like any of these action scenes. They all felt very tired. Been there, done that before. And this pure fantasy way that he shoots it, where the movie is like not in any way grounded in reality. I felt like that worked for when she was telling the story of her books, the Argyle stories, and they would actually, you know, film them and show you what her imagination was thinking. It didn't work for me once we went into the real world, and it was still just as over the top and ridiculous. I think they really made a bad choice by not having those two different tones be any different. Imagine if like the real life actually had consequences, and when people died, you actually felt like, oh my God, this is the real world. This is not my book anymore. I actually do have stakes and danger in the real world, but I never felt that. So the movie is just on a concept level, just didn't really work for me overall. And I think Bryce Dallas Howard, I like her as an actress. I don't blame her for the Jurassic World movies. Like, I think she's fine in those. I think she's good in the first one. I've liked her in other projects. I just think she was really miscast in this movie. She, even when she became a spy, nothing about her attitude-wise or the way she acted felt like a badass spy to me. She's no Charlize Theron or Gina Davis from the 90s. So I do think she was pretty miscast in this movie. And I say that as a Bryce Dallas fan.
So I will say this, that one of the reasons, one of the positives in the movie, I know there aren't a lot of them, I actually liked Bryce Dallas Howard being cast because she doesn't fit the mold of the Charlize Theron or Gina Davis, which is like, you know, like an Olympic level athlete, like someone that, you know, yeah, looks like a model that can bench press 300 pounds. She looked like an average person in this movie. And it's not an insult to her. So I appreciated that she differentiated herself from the other standard actress that you would see in this role, which I appreciated. But that being said, I think you're very much right in that there's a fantasy in the movie, and then instead of there being a reality in the movie, there's another fantasy. And without the distinction, I think you're right. It just becomes a muddled jumble that never really works.
Yeah, well, like you said about Bryce Dallas Howard, I think she pulls off the artist book writer who's over her head role perfectly. She just, for me, wasn't able to make that transformation to a spy. Like, you get somebody like Jennifer Garner in here, or even maybe Natalie Portman, I could see them, because I think they have that switch in them where they could be intimidating. They could be kind of badass. I just don't think Bryce Dallas Howard has that mode in her. If this was it for her, maybe another movie with a better script, a better director, she could. But I think Matthew Vaughn just didn't pull it out of her in this film. So I'm not going to put it all on Bryce Dallas Howard, but I think somebody else could have done it, or maybe they could have been, she could have been directed to do it by another director.
Yeah, and since essentially what we're saying in this review is don't watch Argyle, go watch these other movies that are better versions of it. This character of Sam Rockwell is the exact same character that he plays in a Netflix movie called Mr. Right.
Oh, I never saw that.
It's actually really good with Anna Kendrick. He's playing the same character, but it's actually a much better movie than this. So if you want to take away anything from this, it's skip Argyle unless you really love Kingsman 2. And if you really like Sam Rockwell as a spy, go watch Mr. Right. And if you want to see a badass female spy with amnesia, go watch Long Kiss Goodnight.
100%. I think that's, I think we'll end it there because there honestly is a lot more we could get into this movie, but it's kind of erasing from my memory every minute I've been away from this film. It's one of those movies where I saw it once, I will forget it within a year, except for when people mention Matthew Vaughn movies, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was his worst movie, Argyle. It's not going to be a franchise. I think Henry Cavill's not bad in the movie. For what he's asked to do. I think Sam Rockwell in the first half of the movie is kind of fun. But I feel like the second half, he's just kind of there. It doesn't look like he knows what he's supposed to be doing. The movie feels really like it has no direction towards the end. And it's just a series of weird Matthew Vaughn action scenes that are supposed to, I think, have the audience stand up and cheer. But instead, it just made my eyes roll to the back of my head. So maybe, it's not doing very well in the box office. It's not doing very well with critics. But I'm sure, just like any movie, there will be some people out there who maybe enjoy it and are fans of it. Maybe it'll have a second life when it hits streaming. But for me, it was a big miss. I'll never watch it again. And I won't have to worry about seeing the sequel unless he makes some pact with the devil and Apple just doesn't know what you're doing. But overall, to me, skip this movie. Go watch A Long Kiss Goodnight. Go watch some of the movies we mentioned in our second segment. There's even Night and Day with Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz, I don't think is a very successful movie and is okay. But I would recommend watching that over this movie. Did you ever see Night and Day?
I don't know if I did or not, to be honest with you.
That's how the response Benny just gave you is exactly how I'll be with Argyle 5 years from now. I'm not sure if I did or not. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Sorry.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for coming back for another episode of the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. Next week, we'll be reviewing. What's the big release this week, Benny?
I don't know.
You know what?
Look,
unfortunately, I don't think there's much coming out this weekend. So maybe we'll have to do a little powwow and see what else is coming. But I do know Dune 2 is coming out soon.
Doesn't Madam Web come out next week?
No, that's next. Yeah. What's this week, though? I don't think there's any. We'll have to discuss what we're going to do next week because I don't think there's any main releases coming out. The only tickets I have for this weekend is to go see Dune again because I'm preparing for Dune 2 in March. So I will be seeing Dune. So maybe we could talk about that, especially if I go see it in the theater. Maybe I'll give a little update. I know you revisited Dune recently, correct?
Yeah, just finished it today. We could always do the Trial of Dune.
There you go. Trial of Dune. Yeah, I'm looking at the release for this weekend, and Lisa Frankenstein is the only really major release, which is the new Diablo Cody film that she wrote and directed by Zelda Williams, the daughter of Robin Williams. So yeah, we'll see if we'll talk with Moose, see if maybe Lisa Frankenstein will be our review next week, or maybe we'll do another specialty episode, something interesting. But stay tuned to our Twitter. You can catch me on Twitter at JTE Movie Thinks. I always update the episodes on. I'll give you guys a heads up of what we're going to do next week. I did it for the movie when we did the Action Movie Awards, so I'll do it again this time. So that way you guys at least have a heads up of what we're going to be doing. But thanks so much for listening. Do us a favor. Go on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. Leave a review if you want. If not, we'll be here again next week. Benny, have a good one, buddy.
Good night, everybody.